Hey, welcome back to Women's Wellness Radio. I'm glad to be back. I haven't recorded a show in a little bit, so just feels good to be back in it. I'm recording a lot of good episodes this week. And my guest today is Samantha Levine. She is a naturopath I met recently. We work nearby. We've had some clients in common for some years, and I finally looked her up. And of course, I couldn't leave it there. I had to force her to be on the podcast. And she was a little nervous, but it's going to be a breeze because she knows her stuff. She's been a naturopath for 12 plus years. She's got a really busy practice doing women's health, doing gastrointestinal work. And what we're going to talk about today is the MTHFR gene mutation, which we have not yet talked about on this show, and it's a popular and important topic. So, really happy to have Sam on today. So, first of all, welcome, Sam.
Thanks so much. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. So some people may have heard of this MTHFR, but others haven't heard of it at all. So I was hoping you could start out and just give us some background. What is it? How do you define it?
Sure, I'd love to. Well, MTHFR, obviously it's an acronym, and it stands for methylfolate reductase, is an enzyme in the body that helps to convert one of our more famous nutrients, folic acid, into its active form, methylfolate. So it's a really important enzyme in the body. And when we're talking about MTHFR in regards to health, we're usually discussing the gene that codes for the enzyme that controls that pathway. And there's a lot of news in the world right now about epigenetics, which is the study of genetics and how it might be affecting our health. And MTHFR is one of the more well-studied genes that might be affecting our health overall.
Yeah, so tell us more about this kind of this whole burgeoning understanding of gene mutations and how it affects our health. Can you just give us more background on that? Like, why would genes mutate in the first place? And why is this one gene special? And then does this happen? Is this happening in a lot of other places in our body?
Yeah, it's really a good question, and I would say that first and foremost, we're just at the brink of understanding how epigenetics and gene mutations are affecting our health. Although, 15, 20 years ago when I was in med school, it was out there, but we really weren't being taught the details. And these days, we're learning a lot more about where all these genes plug into our pathways and might affect our health. MTHFR specifically has been studied for a while. It was even on the radar 15 years ago when I was in school. But it really is at the center of a lot of other really important pathways, and that's partly why it's playing such a big role in people's health in many different ways. The way that I describe it to my patients is that folic acid, or folate, as it's actually more appropriately called, folic acid is the synthetic version of folate. So, to be really appropriate, I like to call it folate and not folic acid. Folate and vitamin B12, they basically exchange methyl groups in our body at the center of a web of pathways. And so, some people call it downstream pathways. That would be pathways that emerge off of the center pathway of B12 and folate exchanging methyl groups. MTHFR is the gene that codes for the enzyme that supports that central pathway. And so, if we have genetic mutations on that enzyme or for that enzyme, it might mean that that pathway is downregulated. It doesn't always mean that we have a very specific downregulation. It's not just genes that are going to, predict how healthy we are, but it's obviously a really key component. And so in naturopathic medicine, we are always looking at everything. So it's exciting that we now have some more information about concrete ways that our genes might be affecting our health. And there's, you know, a lot of other things that are going to also affect how well those pathways are working, including stress and stress hormones, neurotransmitter production, nutrition, lifestyle, so exercise, sleep. So it's not just genes. Okay. Your question was about other genes too. And I guess without getting in too much detail, the answer is yes, there's a lot of other genes that are going to code for how well pathways work, but MTHFR really is at the center of many of those.
Okay. So I want to back up a little bit. So this methylfolate reductase is a gene that somewhat creates the enzyme or gives the instruction to create the enzyme to support a pathway that involves folate and B12. And can you talk a little bit more about, you know, what's happening on this pathway? What are some of the actions that folate and B12 are a part of that, like, are important to us?
Sure, I'd love to. So the methylation pathways, they emerge and they support the production of a couple of things that lead to other elements of our health and wellness, or the counter of that, perhaps dis-ease or imbalance in the body. Some very important pathways that they support are neurotransmitter function. So that's going to involve the creation of and the metabolism of pretty much all of our neurotransmitters, adrenaline, dopamine, serotonin, and it also predicts or can contribute to the prediction of whether or not we tend to be allergic. So histamine degradation is a pathway that begins at methylation. In addition, there's liver detoxification. And one thing that I see a lot of is hormone metabolism, and that's specifically in my practice since I do a lot of women's health. Estrogen metabolism. The enzyme, one of the enzymes that actually converts estrogen into its more excretable form, and that helps to create balance. When we can actually get rid of a substance, it helps, you know, balance the whole process in our body. That enzyme is called COMT, and the MT stands for methyl transferase. So, you know, not only is this a potential mutation in and of itself, we can have mutations in any gene SNP in the body, but COMT is also a methyl transferase. So it's a little bit of a, there's a little bit of a twice over concern there with methylation and estrogen metabolism. Other really important functions that are affected by MTHFR mutations are our ability to quench oxidation in the body. The production of glutathione is one of the central things that is occurring in methylation function. And also, really importantly, especially for women's health and pregnancy, but also cancer risk and just healing capacity, MTHFR helps us with cellular replication and cellular repair. So literally, the making of a human is dependent on whether or not MTHFR is working well.
Okay, great. This is really helpful. So some of these kind of objectives of the pathway I've heard of, and some I haven't heard of so much. So it's really interesting. So we definitely hear a lot about the liver and the producing of the glutathione, which is like this master antioxidant in the body. But I did not know about that it was important for histamine breakdown. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. Could be a little missing piece for people with chronic allergies. Oh, I'm doing everything right. Why do I still have allergies? Or I'm doing everything right. Why do I still have this estrogen progesterone imbalance or something like that? Really interesting stuff. And then when you talk about neurotransmitters, a lot of that stuff is brain health and mood that, you know, they're definitely troubling symptoms for women. So really interesting. And can you talk a little bit more about pregnancy, because infertility is, you know, I have some people come to me and say, I'm not getting pregnant. Could it be this? What are signs that MTHFR could be involved in fertility or miscarriage, or is it not that clear cut?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, my introduction to MTHFR was handed to me literally on a piece of paper by a few patients, and only several years ago, probably about 3 years ago, I had a couple women come to me saying they were diagnosed with this genetic mutation that caused them to have three miscarriages. It was a really interesting situation. Two women with very similar backgrounds came to me saying, "Can you help me?" And of course I said, "Well, I don't know a ton, but I'm going to dive in and research it and let you know." And within a couple of weeks, the research was there. I said, "I absolutely can help you with this." And that's where my research began. And so I'm going to talk first a little bit about what I know about the risk for miscarriage and methylation dysfunction. And it's fairly cut and dry. If we have any of the SNPs for MTHFR, and I'm going to start by saying many people do, so this is not a rare condition. We have, basically, there's about 10 different genes that code for MTHFR, two of which we know a whole lot about, and we tend to look predominantly at those when we're really thinking about someone's dysfunction potential. So you would have two copies of each. So that would be kind of a total of four copies of these two different genes. And what we know is at least 45% of people have at least one copy. So just to give you an idea that it is common, and many people come in to me either with their reports in hand, or I help them get their reports about their gene SNPs. And a lot of people, I would almost have to say most people have at least one copy. So it's kind of how dysfunctional are we versus are we dysfunctional? So related to pregnancy and miscarriage, if we're dysfunctional in MTHFR, what we understand is that there's a potential that we're going to actually have blood vessel issues. And so as our placenta is being developed, there can be issues with proper vascularization of a pregnancy, and therefore there can be miscarriage risk for people with MTHFR dysfunction. So for any woman who's considering getting pregnant, I think it's a good idea to either test for MTHFR or just supplement methylated folate in a minimal amount, your average dosage, which might be 1 milligram, which is the same as 1,000 micrograms, or even a little less is probably adequate to prevent MTHFR dysfunction from setting us up for miscarriage. In regards to pregnancy, a lot of us hear about folic acid or folate and a healthy baby. As I said, cellular replication relies on methylation. And so we really need healthy folate in our bodies to make a baby. It's as broad and big picture as that, since so many of us do have at least some version of methylation dysfunction. I always recommend that when people are buying prenatal vitamins, they make sure that it contains the methylated version of folate in it and that they're taking their prenatals throughout their pregnancy.
That's great advice. Okay. I think I was hearing something interesting too, that when we're breastfeeding, our baby could potentially have an MTHFR defect, so to speak, too, and that it could be good for the baby to better for the baby if you're taking methylated folate while breastfeeding versus the synthetic folic acid, which may be hard for the baby to bodies to deal with.
I would agree. At this point, with all the learning I've done and now the clinical experience I've had, I have basically taken off my shelf at my practice any supplement that does not contain the methylated version of folate. So kind of similar to my opinion about women trying to get pregnant and being pregnant, breastfeeding women, it's not optimal for them to be taking a prenatal with methyl folate. And you have to remember there's other things that we're at risk for when we're postpartum. we are going to most likely be depleted. We are feeding a baby if we're breastfeeding. So optimizing our health and wellness is really important for our own bodies. You know, we're probably not sleeping great. You know, there may be mood imbalances because our hormone levels are dropping significantly. And remember, since MTHFR contributes to estrogen metabolism and your body went from having a whole lot of hormones to having a lot less hormones, MTHFR and support on that level is really important to balance mood postpartum as well. And yeah, in regards to breastfeeding, I would say it's just really important to have all the right forms of nutrients, and the methylated form of folate is one of those going into a pregnant woman's body so that they're being absorbed into the breast milk and thereby being absorbed by the baby.
Okay, yeah, that's a good point. So it's not, yeah, I love that you're saying, you know, it's just not this one phase with fertility. It's for everything in our lives, for cancer prevention and our brain health and all that stuff. That's important. It's kind of what we emphasize on this show. So that's really great. So you talked a little bit about the options to test and options to just kind of supplement with methylated folate in your prenatal as kind of a how do we call that? Like a safety net in case you do have a mutation, which many of us do. You also talked about the genes aren't the only factor, and I think that's important if people are listening and getting nervous. It is only one factor that plays in, and if many of us have it, we're all in the same boat, so to speak. You know, we're all kind of dealing with it the best we can. How do people test? Talk a little bit about how testing can happen.
Sure. I think it's really important for people to know that to really take a personal inventory and know that there's different ways that people will be integrating this information. And if one of my patients tends to be a really worrisome patient or has a lot of anxiety going into their health, I will often hesitate testing. I just want to say that outright, especially because there are a lot of programs that you can enter your information into and get a lot of health risk information. There's potential for people to really increase their fears. And, you know, whether or not someone tests, definitely someone should be having a pretty well-trained healthcare provider on their team to help interpret the information, because you can't do all of this by yourself. You know, technically, you can actually order the testing by yourself. You know, you don't need a doctor to do it. And you can figure out how to plug that information into a program that'll give you your health risks without the supervision of a physician. So if someone tends towards anxiety, I recommend definitely either waiting until you feel like, you know, maybe your emotions are a little more grounded to find out some information, and also knowing that genes are not the whole picture. Like, I really tend to work hard at enabling my patients to know that lifestyle and what they're eating, and do they know what their food intolerances are, and are they exercising, and are they choosing things that help increase stress tolerance in their life well before even doing this test if anxiety and health fears are on the picture for them. But doing the testing, you know, there's a lot of different ways to do it these days. It is very popular. You can actually just test for MTHFR genes alone. The women that came into my office just had a blood test actually by their gynecologist, their OB, after two miscarriages, 2 to 3 miscarriages. I think one was two and one was three. And so you can do a blood test physician for MTHFR. You can also do the saliva ancestry testing, the most common of which is 23andMe. And they're a company that they do salivary testing. And they'll give you a report of many, many, many. In fact, it ends up being hundreds of gene SNPs, most of which we don't even have a lot of information on what it really means if you have a mutation on these genes. So people come in with their gene reports to me sometimes, and I say, let's just remember, like, I'm really looking at about 10 things here, and there's a couple hundred. So to me, it's actually probably good information to have in our back pocket as the years click by and we're learning more and more about what the genes mean. And it's only about $100 to do the test. So it's a really, I think it's a really well-priced test for how much information it gets. But the company, 23andMe, has been mandated by the FDA to not actually give health risk information directly to the patient. So you can get your ancestry from the test. You can learn about some of your relatives, if they've done the testing themselves, where you're from, the percent Neanderthal that your body is, which I think people always like to know. They giggle at it. But then from there, you actually take your raw data and you can plug it in to software programs. One of my favorites is mthfrsupport.com, and get that basically translated into which genes have mutations. And then if you really wanted to, you could on your own click through the, you know, there's basically like a Wikipedia for SNPs and learn a little bit about what it means if you have mutations on these genes. But I really recommend you take it to a qualified professional to help you interpret what it means based on your symptoms.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So mthfrsupport.com is a place to put in data. And are there also articles and just more information on that site?
Yeah, that's a really great site for information.
Okay, yeah, I wanted to share a little more resources if people are curious. Any other sites you can think of or like off the top of your head?
Off the top of my head, I can tell you that I'm forgetting the name of his website directly, but Ben Lynch is a fellow colleague of mine. If you just Googled Ben Lynch naturopath, you'd easily come onto his website. He actually has a whole supplement line called Seeking Health, which makes great supplements, keeping in mind MTHFR potential for people. But really what I love about Ben's website is it's just all the really good, juicy information with the sort of what ifs. He really is about educating people. What if I have this gene? What does it mean? What can I do to prevent it from having a negative impact on my health and wellness? So his website's great.
Okay, great. And we'll share the link in the show notes. Yeah, he's definitely a real leader. And he had MTHFR himself, kind of undiagnosed and causing a lot of symptoms for a long time. So I think that's an interesting bit of his story that, you know, he can really connect with this issue. So this is so helpful. I wondered if we could just close up with some more recommendations for support if you do have MTHFR mutation. First of all, if you can just get a little more specific about what people should look for on the label of a prenatal, if it might be confusing, and then if there's any food or lifestyle recommendations you have.
Sure. Yeah. If you're looking at the product information on a supplement, there's a few things I look out for. Whatever the nutrient, a label should say what form that nutrient is in. If it doesn't, say what form that nutrient is in. In other words, if it just says calcium, 200 milligrams, it's not giving you all the information you need. And that often makes me slightly suspicious, and I invite people to put that back on the shelf. It should say, calcium carbonate or calcium citrate. And that goes for every nutrient in the body. It should have the form of the nutrient. So when you're looking at folate, and I really haven't mentioned it that much, but B12 is another one that's really important to have methylated in a supplement. You want to look for, it'll say folate or folic acid, and it should say folate. And then it'll say parentheses as methylfolate. There's a few other words that are basically trademarked versions of methylfolate. Metafolin is one of them. I can't think of the others off the top of my head, but it should be really clear. Sometimes it'll say 5 methylfolate, the same thing, or L5 methylfolate. That's important. So that's what you look for. And most products are containing at least 400 micrograms of methylfolate. That's a good dosage to have just as a standard. So there might be something that's a B-complex that should have methylated folate in it, because, folate is actually B9. A lot of people don't know that, but there should be folate in every B complex out there, and in addition to B12, B6, B3, B2, and all the others. And then a good prenatal and a good multivitamin, and sometimes you'll just find methylfolate on the shelf by itself. Other things to do to support methylation, you know, to be honest, it's really individual, but big picture, stress management, reducing inflammation in the body. So that might be identifying food intolerances or food triggers. It might be controlling how well your body is regulating cortisol. That's your stress hormone output. Are you sleeping well? Do you have energy through the day? Is there anything in your life that you would define as a great stressor that you could do something about, shift the way you're tolerating it, or have tools in your back pocket to help support your body? Maybe it's simple things, more exercise, more water. These all sound very big picture in general, but they are really the keys to reducing the stress on the body and improving methylation function.
Sure. I think this is important to mention. Sometimes as a practitioner, you feel like you sound like a broken record, but it's like sense in taking fancy supplements if you're just going to be dehydrated and eating junk food.
Right.
So let's get the basics taken care of first. Samantha, this has been so great, so helpful. I'm wondering if people want to work with you or learn more about you. I should have mentioned we're here in Portland, Oregon. Do you want to talk a little bit more about your practice and your website?
Yeah, I'd love to. I have a private practice in northeast Portland, down on North Interstate Ave. My website is docerenaturopathicwellness.com. It's the name of my practice, and that's spelled D-O-C-E-R-E, naturopathicwellness.com. I'm pretty, findable on the web if you just kind of were to be searching for Samantha Levine in Portland. And I practice 4 days a week, so I'm pretty readily accessible, and I do general wellness, family care. I do see children, and my passion really is women's health and hormones.
Great. Super, super helpful again. Thanks so much. And maybe I'll be able to convince you to come on again and talk about something else. You totally rocked it.
I would love to. This was super fun.
Great. And to our listeners, thank you. We really appreciate you. We just recorded this one today as an audio. It's early in the morning here, and I'm not beautified yet. So this is audio only. And we're doing the show mostly every week. I'm going to kind of define it as that. You know, occasionally I have a week that's just, it's too much to set up the show, but mostly every week show. So we'd love for you to subscribe on whatever podcast app you use, whether it's in iTunes or in Podcast Republic or whatever you're using. We'd love for you to subscribe so you get the next show and so you can keep in touch. If you'd like to learn more about me and other resources I have, I usually post the shows also as a blog, and I have some written resources there at my website, which is bridgetdanner.com. So until next time, thanks everyone. Be well.